Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back into the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. Week 5 is in the books, and we are going to review that with this Fish and Chips edition of the podcast. So joining me, as he always does, is Mr. Brian Fisher, just back from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Brian, welcome back home, and sort of outside of the game, we'll get to that, but outside of the game, how was your trip to Stillwater?
It was always good. First time up there to Stillwater, my second time in as many weeks in the state of Oklahoma, so a little bit of driving back and forth around there, but it was good. The weather, you know, held up. There was a threat of rain, but that thankfully didn't come, but a great atmosphere at Oklahoma State, and you know, after the game, Mac Brown mentioned that it was kind of, you know, one of the best atmospheres that he's been in at that stadium. They had a great crowd, and it was a great place to watch the game, and it was a great game. So it was a fun trip to Stillwater, and I'll certainly look forward to going back whenever that happens.
What is the tailgating, sort of the game day atmosphere around Stillwater? I have never been myself, so I don't know whether it's got any good traditions or anything around the stadium that's necessarily the standard, if you will.
Well, you know, I usually try to get to games about 3 hours, 3.5 hours before the game itself starts. And I tried to do that this time, but I was glued to the television watching West Virginia Baylor. So I kind of got there a little late. And you know, as I was walking around, it was a very relaxed atmosphere, you know, very spread out. You know, I think that was the one thing that I noticed is, you know, it's not all kind of one big area like, say, the Grove is or any other place like that in the country. It was kind of spread out all around campus. Everybody kind of had their little thing. It wasn't, you know, it was very low-key, but it was also exciting. They had great setups. You know, you saw the multi-TV type tailgates. It was pretty cool. And the place itself is fantastic. You know, T-Bone's Pickens Stadium is great. The press box was fantastic. They served great food up there. Had, you know, probably the best press box bathroom that I've ever been in. You know, it's little things that count, of course. But, you know, the stadium itself and kind of the atmosphere reminded me a lot of Oregon and kind of how it's a team a ways from a big city, kind of out of ways. Smaller stadium, they really pack it in. There's only, I think it's 54,000, 55,000 right around there that are actually in it. But great crowd, great atmosphere. You know, the fans are really on top of the field. It very close to the field of play itself, and the benches, you know, the fans are really right up against them. So great atmosphere, and obviously it was a great game as Texas squeaked one out at the end.
So does T-Boone Pickens Stadium or Outzen Stadium in Oregon, which one of those two that you just mentioned has the nicer press box bathroom?
I'll go T-Boone with the it was the nicer press box bathroom, but I do like going up to Autzen. I think that's a great atmosphere up there. The fans are fantastic. They're very into the game. The only thing that I've noticed is you know, Autzen itself is an open air press box. They can't close it off, but for the most part they leave it open. And you know, sometimes, you know, some of those late October games, November games, it can get pretty chilly in there. And
oh, you wimp! No way, dude. It's L.A. man. You've got there's nothing close to even the frigid air that you would hear a Big Ten fan complain about come late October or even mid October for some of them.
Well, there's a reason a lot of those Big Ten press boxes are closed off. I'll tell you that right now.
That's true. All right, one of those games you did just mention, we've got to start off here. I think so. I mean, it is going to be one of the stories of the season. He has quickly become a name that, of course, I'm talking about Geno Smith, a name that sort of even your not diehard college football fans are jumping on board with. And that's sort of that critical mass point I've always thought when you think about, you know, all of your friends, if the ones that don't even know or care about college football are mentioning a player's name, especially at the college level, then you've sort of hit that new stardom. Geno Smith, after 656 yards, 8 touchdowns, leading West Virginia in the 70-63 shootout over Baylor. It was nonstop fun for everyone, but do you think that the big numbers and the is this going to be a major overreaction from the people that haven't been following necessarily the Big 12 and Baylor?
No, I think this was kind of the game that we expected. We all expected a shootout given the way the two defenses had played coming into this matchup, and certainly, you know, Baylor was shaky. I mean, they looked all right, I think, at the beginning of the year against SMU, and obviously that's an offense that's pretty wide open and handled them fairly well. But after that, they kind of were not in the right positions, and we saw that against West Virginia where Geno Smith just really picked them apart. And, I mean, hats off to him. I mean, 656 yards, the 8 touchdowns, the numbers were unbelievable. And the thing that I take away from this game was it was not just him throwing to wide open guys. He put the ball on the money with some spectacular throws. And the completions were there. I mean, if you read Bruce Feldman's Big Picture off of the game, you know, you saw that the effort and the perfectionist that Geno Smith is, and he's just a very nice kid. He really does take the game of football seriously, and you can see in this offense how well he operates it. He makes the right checks. He knows where to go with the football. He's not rattled, and I think, yeah, it wasn't a great defense that he's gone against, but for right now, I think you still have to look at the throws that he's making, the reads that he's making, and still have to be amazed at what he's been doing.
I'm worried that a game like this changes sort of the talking points as we look at the college football season, which, you know, some of them are there's a little bit of legitimacy to this, but I don't want this discussion to be, you know, all of a sudden turn into a regional debate of Big 12 style football versus SEC style football versus Big 10 style football, because I would argue that right now you look across the board and every single conference, every single region, there's going to be different teams playing different styles. I mean, you look at the Tennessee Georgia game, and you know that wasn't your what you would say out of a quote SEC style. And I worry that as we're looking at these teams, West Virginia, a top 10 team, you know, you've got South Carolina, Georgia, LSU, Alabama, and the SEC, as people are trying to debate, you know, where these teams rank, I don't want to get distracted with short, easy argument. I mean, that's like a first take style argument. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like an easy out without necessarily being a whole lot of truth to it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what defenses are doing, and they are being fairly aggressive against these spread-type teams, and you've seen them get burned a couple times, and that's obviously what happened to Baylor. You know, it's not a lack of athletes, I think, on the defensive side of the ball. Certainly, when you look at the Big 12 teams, the defensive tackles are not quite what they have been in that league in prior years with some of those squads. I mean, you know, back in the days, you know, I remember Oklahoma and Texas, and they were just kind of churning out defensive tackles year after year after year. And, you know, I don't really think that any team in the Big 12 at this moment has the defensive tackles to really put pressure on the quarterback to where you can get some push on the front four, and that allows you to do a lot more on the back seven and combat these type spread teams. But this is the way of the future. I mean, you look at from high school on up, these teams are getting very good at the spread offenses. The quarterbacks are getting a lot of reps. They know how to read defenses earlier and earlier, and it's just a comfort factor, I think, for a lot of folks. And, you know, I'm curious to see if anybody can slow it down. I think it's an exciting proposition this season, especially to see a team like Alabama or LSU take on one of these spread offenses. You know, maybe it's a Florida State, although they're a little bit more traditional than a lot of others, but they have those weapons to where you can spread them out. Oregon, obviously, West Virginia. It's just going to be an interesting trend, I think, in college football to look for the rest of the season, especially in the Big 12 Conference, which is really where it kind of is taking note with West Virginia and Baylor and Oklahoma State and all these teams.
Right there with the game that you were just at, before we sort of get into Texas and Oklahoma State, do you think Bergeron's game-winning touchdown was a touchdown or a fumble? You were there. Weren't you on the field for that play?
I was on the field. I wasn't on that end because I was on Oklahoma State's end if they had scored and had the big upset. And so that's why I was kind of thinking, I was, you know, but, you know, I saw the replay. I think it was a fumble. I mean, you know, it's just so hard in that situation. I think, you know, Mike Gundy obviously came out and said it was a fumble. You know, was it conclusive enough to where they could have overturned it? You know, obviously the question, you know, the answer is no. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it really didn't matter because, you know, Texas would have scored anyway. So, you know, he was in, Texas scored. And, you know, I think the bigger play that I wanted to, you know, see more replays of was kind of the last play that Oklahoma State had, because it looks like they had open daylight to score a touchdown on that backwards lateral. And it was a pretty crazy atmosphere, pretty crazy game, and big for both teams, especially Texas, as they go into their stretch, because they have a very tough stretch coming up, not only with West Virginia, they got Oklahoma coming up. Going to be interesting to see how the Horns handle this.
Yeah, I was going to say the a couple of takeaways that I had from the game. I know, first of which, I completely agree with you. I saw that this was a note that you had during the game. This is a huge statement for Oklahoma State's offense, and what you know, Walsh did a pretty strong job under center. Julius Randle, we've always known that he was phenomenal, but he stepped up when he really needed to, especially with those questions at the quarterback position. Oklahoma State's offense is good. And the second of which being David Ash is obviously starting to mature a lot, and I wanted to ask you, you know, what does this say for Texas, and how do you foresee the next couple weeks going? Because this was the first time that we've gotten to see this Longhorn team, which has improved. You know, we've all been able to see how they've gotten better. Now, where do they stack up against the rest of the Big 12, and then even, you know, the top 10, top 15 on the national scene?
Yeah, I still think Texas, and a lot of people are kind of taken away from the defense, and you do have to keep in mind, this is an offense that puts up points, it puts up yards, and I think we saw a little bit of a coming out party from J.W. Walsh, who you can see as a different kind of quarterback than what Wes Lunt is for them. You know, he can use his legs, he can make all the throws. I mean, that was probably the one thing that impressed me more than anything. He was on the money, he was very accurate. He did throw that one interception kind of early in the game that led to some Texas points, but you know, for the most part, he played fairly mistake-free. He moved the ball well with the offense. And Joseph Randle, who might be the most underrated running back in the Big 12, considering how much he means to that team and what he can do, was also phenomenal with over 150 yards. You know, this is just an offense that puts a lot of pressure on defenses. And for as good as Texas might be, and remember, they were missing their starting linebacker in Hicks, and they were missing a defensive tackle, and a few other guys got hurt during the game. You know, this was a very, I think, solid effort to hold an Oklahoma State team that had been coming in and scoring 69 points the week before to as many as they did, because let's face it, it's just so tough now with these, if you get guys in space, and an offense like Oklahoma State does a phenomenal job about that, and I don't care what kind of athlete you have, and Texas has some of the best on the defensive side of the ball, it's going to be difficult to stop them.
Let's go from there over. How much of Tennessee, Georgia did you get to see?
Got to see quite a bit of that, you know, and I was surprised at certainly the way that game played out. You know, I think it would have been a little bit higher scoring than a lot of people expected, but I didn't think anything about that point explosion we saw on Saturday on CBS. I think, you know, there is a very good Tennessee offense, but everybody looked at this Georgia defense, especially after what they did to Missouri, and said, all right, well, this is a pretty good unit. And we come to find out, well, maybe they're not quite as good as we thought, even though they are a very solid defense with Jarvis Jones. You know, I think the defensive line is a lot better than a lot of people give them credit for. But, you know, for Georgia, this is a game they had to win. You know, it was at home. It was an SEC East battle. It certainly sets them up this week against South Carolina. And, you know, I think for Aaron Murray and Mark Richt and the Georgia Bulldogs, it was encouraging to come out with a win and to see your offense be able to put up these points. But if Todd Grantham can get things fixed on the defense, this team, I think, is right there in that next step in the SEC with LSU, with South Carolina, and kind of chasing Alabama. And certainly not having to play either Alabama or LSU is huge for Georgia this year. If they can beat the South Carolina team this week, it really sets up them to, you know, to have a nice little run heading into Atlanta.
Yeah, the Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, LSU, that second tier, that sets up everything for this coming weekend. We saw South Carolina, real sleepy start, got hit in the mouth early by Kentucky. I think it was a 17-7 halftime deficit. Home crowd was going wild. South Carolina wakes up, pounds the ball with Lattimore, and escapes with a 38-17 win. I can't tell exactly what to expect from that game because it's at South Carolina. You know that this is really probably one of the biggest home games that they're going to have at South Carolina. Maybe, you know, I guess you take, like, remember the upset over Alabama?
Yeah.
2 years ago. This could be the biggest game since then, right?
I would have to say so, and certainly South Carolina fans are putting an emphasis on it. I saw Josh Kendall, one of the beat writers, tweet that tickets were going for as much as $5,500 a ticket for this game, which you know shows you how big it is for those fans. And you know, I certainly think it's interesting to see South Carolina coming off a little bit of a struggle against Kentucky. I mean, I don't know if that was the case of, hey, they were not going to show a whole lot because they knew Georgia was coming up, or if they really just didn't match up well. And they have had their struggles up in Lexington, and they've from time to time have struggled to come out with a win, but end up with one. And, you know, I'm curious to see how they're going to respond. Connor Shaw has been a lot better than a lot of people think when he's been in there and been healthy. You know, you saw it last week, you know, the 20-some-odd completions in a row, and certainly he's got a very good passing rating. He's making the right decision. You combine that with Marcus Lattimore and then Jadeveon Clowney on defense, and you got a solidly built team that certainly can win the SEC East. I think there's no doubt about it. They can beat Georgia. I don't think they will, to give you a little preview of the early picks. But, you know, this is going to be an interesting matchup, no doubt about it, because both teams are coming off games where they have to make some big corrections. And that's adds a lot of intrigue, I think, into this matchup in South Carolina.
Yeah, I take the whole first half from Kentucky, South Carolina, and I sort of take it with a grain of salt. I would not be surprised if a little bit of it might have been just sort of not being prepared for freshman quarterback Jalen Whitlow. I mean, no Morgan Newton, no Maxwell Smith, so Jalen Whitlow gets in there, and you know he has the rushing touchdown. He leads another scoring drive. They force a fumble. I just thought a lot was going their way. Then they go into halftime, come back out, and Steve Spurrier said on the broadcast, he said it was like, well, we're not playing very smart. And then they went into the locker room. They made their corrections, came out, and just completely shut Kentucky down in the second half. I, you know, maybe looking a little bit ahead to Georgia, I still love South Carolina on defense. I don't know. I can't decide whether South Carolina would hang with Georgia in another shootout, because I think clearly, especially with the way that, you know, it seems like Bobo has figured out how to use the Keith Marshall and Todd Gurley together. And they went in there and they decided it seemed like they were going to attack Tennessee on the perimeter, and so they were able to get out and create some space, create some lanes, and both running backs, you know, when they hit that sideline, just incredible breakaway speed. And I'm interested to see, after watching a little bit of that game, how you would plan to use all the different weapons on Georgia's offense against a very, very, very good South Carolina defensive front specifically, and just sort of the whole unit. It creates a very cool X's and O's game heading into week six.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how Georgia designs a scheme to block Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, South Carolina does not blitz a ton this year to try and get pressure on the quarterback, and that's because they do have such a great front four, and they can keep their linebackers back. They can play the run. They can drop off into coverage, and it really presents a bigger challenge, I think, if you're a quarterback, into seeing what they're going to throw at you. I'm curious to see how much they do keep those two running backs in, the two freshmen in Gurley and Marshall, because probably the one thing that you look at as an incoming guy at the running back position, if they're going to struggle, it's going to be with pass protection. And certainly they're going to have to chip block. They're going to have to, you know, at some point double team Clowney with a running back, and I'm curious to see how that will go for Georgia's offense. But I think it's just an intriguing matchup because both teams can really play either style. I think Georgia could go ahead and pound it and run the ball a lot more than they pass it, and the same for South Carolina, and then they could flip. I could see it being a shootout for sure. I really think this is one of the more intriguing games on the slate on Saturday, and certainly it's the only one with these two top 10 teams.
We got Oregon. Let's get through some top 25 matchups. Oregon goes to Seattle to face Washington State, emerges 51-26 with the victory. The Ducks, to me, my read, it's like they don't even really need to fully get going. It's like they the third quarter in the last two contests, but the Arizona win and then this time against Washington State, it's like a switch gets flipped, and defensively, offensively, they just sort of ascend to a new level. Is that a coaching? Is that halftime, adjustments? Or do you think that just right now they're a slow starting team right now?
Well, I think Chip Kelly is one of the best at making those halftime adjustments on offense. I mean, every time you look at this team, and as he's been there in Eugene, they just kind of run away from teams in the second half, and they've only lost one conference game, and that was because they got so far behind in the first half they couldn't end up coming back, even though they were very close against USC last year. But I mean, this is an Oregon team that in that first half did not look as sharp. They weren't executing like they had been. Maybe that's a combination of being their first road game and getting used to things at the NFL stadium up at CenturyLink Field. Washington State obviously is going to try to play them very hard. I think they were very motivated after what happened to them and certainly losing to Colorado. They wanted to come out and show that they were a lot better than a lot of people think. And Mike Leach gives teams problems. I mean, he's one of the best at attacking defenses. I think we saw that from Washington State and against these Ducks defense. But, you mentioned that third quarter. I mean, 21 points, it was just it was like a switch was flipped, and that was the end of that. And I still don't think anybody can come close in the conference to what Oregon has been doing.
Number three, LSU in the AP poll, which was released Sunday, slides to number four, maintain their spot at number three in the coaches poll. And a lot of that's because they looked very sloppy against Towson, only winning 38-22. Zach Mettenberger said after the game, he said, they've been sloppy, and the team's admitting that the wins are not very convincing right now. How convinced are you that LSU is going to be the favorite in your eyes to beat Florida ahead in week six? I mean, this is an LSU team that we had sort of as our number one or number two almost by default through the offseason. USC loses, they're able to hang right up there. How much is your confidence in them wavered at all, or do you think that they'll be able to bounce back, especially rise to the occasion against tougher opponents?
Yeah, I wonder if a team as veteran as this LSU one is, if they kind of see a team like Townsend come in and say, well, we're just going to roll on over them, and maybe they take them less lightly leading up in terms of preparation and certainly the game. Maybe there's just not the feeling of execution amongst the coaching staff and calling the right plays. But I'm curious to see if the Tigers can respond. They certainly have a big test going to Florida with both teams undefeated. I think Zach Mettenberger is really the key to whether LSU can get back to the national title game or not. I mean, he's been turning the ball over the past couple games, whether it be fumbles, whether it be throwing an interception here or there. But I think he will go the team will go as far as he takes them, because they are such a good running team, because they do have such a solid offensive line, because they do have a great defense. It really does come down to the quarterback. Now, is he going to be better than, Jordan Jefferson and the long line of LSU quarterbacks the past couple of years? I think he can be. You look at what he can do with his arm strength and the throws that he can make. He is definitely different from the kind of the mold that the Tigers quarterbacks have had in the past. But I would expect LSU in a big game against Florida at the Swamp to really come out and be fired up and really show that, hey, you guys were sleeping on us and we weren't executing, but this is how we execute and this is how good we can be.
Florida State did look kind of sloppy themselves against South Florida. They did end up winning 30-17, but that is with only one. I think it was only. Okay, there were two second-half touchdowns. There was just a certain point in that Florida State game where the offense just kind of shut it down. They looked a little sleepy. They looked a little lazy, and which is a team that is so speedy. They seem to have several different opportunities where they could have, you know, issued the kill stroke to the Bulls. They only converted on 5 of 15 third downs, and it was just until the Christian Jones scoop and score in the third quarter, you know, it looked like it was a game that South Florida was one or two big plays away from climbing in, but the defense, you know, sort of steps up, shuts them down entirely, and after an early third quarter touchdown, actually they did get one more, but I think held to 268 yards. Is Florida State the number three team in the country on your top 10 when you do survey in the field this week?
You know, I'm not sure how to kind of treat this game because Florida State certainly did look sloppy early on. And I mean, you looked at what South Florida was doing and they weren't anything special. I think they weren't calling trick plays or doing anything like that. They were just, you know, kind of lining up and running their offense like they have been with some success. Now, give credit to Mark Stoops and the defensive staff at Florida State, because after halftime, it was a different game. It was a different game defensively and offensively, but most importantly, I think the Seminoles really came to understand, hey, we got to tighten up. And you look at, I think they had just, you know, I mean, 268 yards allowed in the game, just 3.7 yards a play is pretty good. They forced some turnovers. You know, you mentioned the scoop and score. I mean, this was a very good effort defensively. Offense, yeah, they still need some work. I think that's the one area where I still have concern, especially along the offensive line. You know, I think if you know, you talk about this team getting to the national title game, well, how can they handle the Miami front four or even a Florida front seven? I mean, this is you know, still some questions to be asked about how well that offensive line can hold up for E.J. Manuel, because even in the games against the FCS opponents, they've been able to get to him some pressure on him, and certainly Clemson was able to in that first half. So he's a big part of their offense, and if Florida State can keep E.J. Manuel upright and not get too much pressure on him, certainly they can go all the way and end up being one of the teams in the mix for the national title. But this game illustrates a lot of the issues that they have, and in terms of they've got to take games seriously throughout the season as they get into the ACC slate, as they don't play these, you know, ranked opponents, as they end up not leaving the state, you know, only two more times, or I think it is three more times the rest of the season. They've got to be focused week in and week out, and they can't be the Florida State of old.
Yeah, that's the trip to Virginia Tech is not looking as intimidating as before, but there's, like you, that game against South Florida reminded me, not just, I guess like anybody needs a reminder, but, you know, this, just because you're blown away one week by how invincible and phenomenal a team looks and how every piece seems to be clicking and everyone looks really, really good, most teams in the country are going to be able to be beat by about anybody. And like you said, once you get into ACC play, the Florida State of old is going to go and lose this Saturday at NC State at night. The Florida State of old is going to go up to Virginia Tech in Blacksburg undefeated and lose that game. You know, this is going to be a really good test. I expect that we will see more games like the South Florida game than the 52-0 blowout of Wake Forest. I think there's going to be a lot more just sort of tough, gritty wins, where luckily Florida State does have Stoops and that defense where they'll be able to make adjustments about every single game at halftime, come back out, and, you know, the hope will be that the offense can make the most of the opportunities that I'm sure they will be given.
And that Miami game looks a lot tougher now.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah, definitely.
Florida at the end of the season. I mean, this is everybody looks at the schedule and says, all right, you know, the Seminoles are a cakewalk down to the title game in Miami. I'm not convinced.
Not at all.
Throw in the ACC title game. Week in and week out, they've just got to take things seriously. And like you said, avoid being the Florida State of old where they just lose a clunker and you're just like, how did they lose that? You know, I guess they could at least say they're lucky in that they already got the Wake Forest game out of the way and beat them up pretty well. So maybe there's that.
What was your are you more impressed with Ohio State or disappointed with Michigan State through 5 weeks of the season?
Probably more disappointed with Michigan State at this point in the season. I think Ohio State coming in with Urban Meyer, having the quarterback that really fits that system very well in Braxton Miller, they were always going to be fine. That they always had talent. The good coaching staff coming in there, there was not going to be any question in my mind that Ohio State was going to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten. Did I imagine them undefeated at this point? Maybe. You know, I think you look at the schedule, they're all winnable games, and certainly they'll be favored from here on out, I would think, in the Big Ten, which obviously presents a bit of a conundrum for the conference if they were to run the table. But, you know, for Michigan State, Le'Veon Bell and that offense have kind of taken a step back. You're not getting the production out of Andrew Maxwell that you would have expected. There's not really a burner that can stretch the field at the wide receiver position. And the defense, you know, I mean, it's been pretty good, but it needs some help from the offense. And if a team loads the box to stop Le'Veon Bell, you know, can Michigan State make those plays to open things up? And frankly, we haven't seen that.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot right here. Let's go fish and chips, week 5 review, honor roll. Let's give me, other than we agree Geno Smith would need to make the honor roll, right?
Right.
Okay. Give me two players that you would definitely add that starred, very much impressed you or surprised you, just sort of the one of your big stars from week 5.
I'm going to go with Texas A&M's Johnny Manziel. You know, threw for a school record, 453 yards, added another 100-plus on the ground to set an SEC record for total offense. I mean, he was phenomenal. He just carved up an Arkansas defense that is leaking like no other. And, I mean, he's already got 15 touchdowns in the last three games. I mean, he's doing very well in that air raid offense with Kevin Sumlin and Cliff Kingsbury. Phenomenal performance against Arkansas. I'm curious to see how he'll do on the road at Ole Miss this week. I think that's going to be a big game. And then another even bigger one against Louisiana Tech, where he could put up a lot of points and a lot of yards against that Bulldogs defense that has really struggled and is, you know, in the 110s of the NCAA defense. And another surprise, I think Matt McGloin, you know, kind of turn things around for Penn State. They've obviously, the program has been dealing with a lot. Threw for 211 yards, rushed for a touchdown as well, threw for another one. I mean, he's got more rushing touchdowns than Denard Robinson. I mean, that's how good of a season he's been doing, and turned, you know, kind of a guy that a lot of Penn State fans were kind of down on last year. He's been really one of the bright spots in the offense and has turned the season around. Very surprising, I think, for a lot of folks, but he's been doing well and certainly making the most out of a difficult situation.
I'm gonna put Kenyon Barner on there. I liked the fact that he bounced right back out because he's not a name that we've been mentioning when we've been talking about Oregon's success for the most part. It's Marcus Mariota. It's you know, DeAnthony Thomas. You know, we're very surprised and, you know, excited about the defense and the speed and what they're able to do with turnovers. But Kenyon Barner comes out, runs for 195 yards, 3 touchdowns, and it was almost like a reminder, like, hey guys, like, don't forget that still one of the best. I think he's, you know, number 6 in the country in rushing, at least top 10 at this point. He's already had a 200-yard game against Fresno State. You know, he is one of the best running backs in the country, and he's just another weapon on that team, and it was nice to see him break back out again.
Well, I'll certainly agree because he's on my fantasy team, so I certainly liked what he did this weekend against Washington State, but so many weapons on that offense, and he's one of them, shouldering the primary load for the first time in his career and doing a great job of it. And I'm curious to see how much more Chip Kelly uses him, because I don't think he's been put in the greatest of situations. Yeah, he's gotten the plays called for him and all this, but he can do so much more in that offense. And I'm curious to see if maybe Chip Kelly's been holding him back, because he's a guy that you can split out, you can do a lot of things, and I think he could be a dynamic threat. And certainly when you combine that with what DeAnthony Thomas is doing, that's a scary proposition if you're a defensive coordinator, because those are two of the most flexible guys in terms of what they can do. And Marcus Mariota, the quarterback, has been phenomenal. He struggled a little bit against Washington State, but for the most part, his touch, his accuracy, has really made a lot of people forget about Darren Thomas very quickly.
And then let's cut the honor roll off at five. I'll round us out here. I'm putting Justin Wilcox, Washington defensive coordinator, on there for just the phenomenal job he did getting the Huskies ready for Stanford. Incredible rushing game that we had seen through four. We had seen an incredible rushing attack through four games, led by Stephen Taylor and a still very solid offensive line. And whether it was bothering Nunez and they were bringing so much heat on him all game, held Stanford to just 235 yards of total offense, 65 yards of team rushing. So Wilcox and that, you know, new hire to the staff, great job by Sarkisian. With your permission, I'd like to add him as the fifth member of our Week 5 honor roll.
Absolutely. He's a phenomenal young defensive coordinator, knows his stuff. I've been telling people for years while he was at Tennessee that this was one of the brighter defensive minds in the country, did a great job with the Vols with not a ton of talent, was still able to put out a unit that was able to stop some people week in and week out in the SEC. And you know, you look at what he did with Washington against Stanford, a team that really wants to pound you. He loaded up the box, he forced them to be one dimensional, and really won them the game. I mean, you say what you want about that Washington offense, it was really the defense that kept them in this game and made it a close one before they could win it at the end.
Yeah, both touchdowns were on big plays. You know, the explosion play is pass of more than 20 yards, run of more than 16. Yeah, both touchdowns were on explosion plays. That game was definitely won by the defense. All right, well, that about wraps it up for this Fish and Chips Week 5 review. Brian, I appreciate you taking some time out of your Sunday to hop on the podcast.
Always good to recap the weekend, and looking forward to a really big Week 6. I'm excited for this slate. Last week, you know, it was kind of like, we don't know about all these games, and there wasn't really a truly appealing one, but it ended up being some phenomenal college football action like it always does. And this week we get some big-time top 25 matchups. Should be a great one.
It should. Well, thanks so much for tuning in. Remember, you can get all the CBSSports.com college football podcasts on iTunes. You can also go to the blog and click on podcasts and get a collection of all of them right there on the website. And also be sure to follow the Ion College Football blog on Twitter @IonCFB. For Brian Fisher, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for tuning in.